the Son of Cheese Half Hour Power Hour. I'm Derek Knight of SonofCheese.com. With me, as always, is Colin Burton from FizzlingPop.com.
Hello, everybody.
And special guest in studio, the Jewario, Justin Carmichael.
Hey, everybody.
And in the past, on episodes, we have spoken about Freak Train. So this is nothing new, but we have never spoken so authoritatively about Freak Train as today, since we're just Johnny-come-latelys to the whole thing. And now, on the line, we have a very special guest, the host of Freak Train, Jeree Henshaw.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to join you and talk with you guys.
It's always nice when people lie to us. We like that.
Yeah.
Make us feel better. So why don't we just begin at the beginning, literally, how and when did Freak Train get its start?
Freak Train began in August of 2000. The how is sort of the Bug Theater and another theater company called Promethean Theater Company collaborated to devise something that could happen on Monday nights, which are dark for theater, and sort of kind of connect everybody who's off doing different shows and, you know, in different rehearsal schedules, and give them sort of an arena to play with, you know, stuff that they weren't able to necessarily do otherwise. So it was just an open format. You know, if you had a monologue you have always wanted to do but, you know, are never getting cast in that particular role, it was, you know, come do that crazy monologue you'd never get cast for. Or let's see the scenes you guys are working on for plays that are coming up or whatnot. And then it wasn't too long before other artists and, you know, other disciplines started hooking into it, and we saw more performance art. And then it wasn't long before the audience that was, sort of faithfully growing began saying, hey, if they can do that shit, I can do some shit too. So pretty soon it became what it is today, which is, you know, a place where the audience has certainly cultivated a sense of, you know what, for 5 minutes we can endure anything. and with a free beer in our hand, we might even laugh. It's a really great atmosphere, and it all started with just, you know, the idea that, hey, you know, Monday nights, we're not doing anything. Let's fuck around.
I think that's how most things start.
Yeah.
But have there ever been any lean times for the train where you thought that it might not be able to keep going?
No.
No. Well.
There have been times where I wondered, you know, how changes would affect it. You know, so the first major change that occurred was when we lost our first host, Joel.
Okay, and before we get into that. I do want to ask you exactly how many co-hosts you've driven off. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. How many co-hosts you have had to this point?
Well, like I said, originally it began as a collaboration between the Bug Theater and Promethean, and Joel Harmon was the artistic director of Promethean Theater, and he sort of by default had begun, as the host. He was just really, really good at it, and what we had done was sort of rotate in co-hosts, and then it just turned out, after I co-hosted with him a couple different times, that we had a really great chemistry, and he asked, you know, would you be, you know, my permanent co-host, and I said, sure. So, you know, it was great, you know, because he knew his gig, and I was just, you know, happy to be along and sidekick with him. And then suddenly, and it was very sudden, he and his wife ended up moving to Oregon.
Hmm.
And suddenly it's like, what? Wait.
So before you were thrust into the role as host, what were exactly your credentials as co-host?
My credentials as co-host?
Yeah, where did you come from?
Just that I had been a regular freak up to that point. I had performed in every single Freak Train up until, you know, the point of becoming the permanent co-host.
Hmm.
And even when I was out of town in New York studying with a theater company up there, I arranged to call in a Freak Train act.
Literally phoning it in.
Yeah, literally phoned it in. So I was, I just very much loved it. I loved the spirit that it evoked from performers as well as the audience. So so it, you know, it was something that was very, very important to me. And Alex, you know, our guy behind the booth, the voice of all crazy voices, he too has never missed a freak train.
Well, I hope not, since he runs the soundboard.
Well, but you know, some people don't really realize what an amazing talent he has developed over the years in terms of, you know, quick reactions to things and you know, making things up for performers as they go along. But my credentials up, but you know, apart from that, you know, I was just a local actor and performer, you know, so and I, you know, I was a member of the theater company there at the Bug at the time. So
back to the number of co-hosts you've run off. So once you were thrust, like Colin said, here, hold this, once you were thrust into the job as host after your first one left, how did that progress from there?
Oh, well, it progressed from there with me going, well, shit, you know, who the hell am I going to get up here with me? And we decided to, you know, our first sketch dealing with his departure after was, you know, we decided to play with a good friend of mine, Ashley Vinson, and we wrote a sketch which was, she was a temp, a co-host temp. I called a co-host temp agency. They sent her right over, and we just had such a blast on that one that, you know, afterward I was, you know, sort of talking it over with Alex, and I was like, I don't know about you, but that felt right to me. And he said, fuck yeah, you know. So we said, you know, Ashley, you want to play again? And she was like, sure. And then it was like, Ashley, you want to play again? Yeah, sure. Ashley, you want to be my co-host?
And then Ashley left you. And
Ashley left me. I love talking. I'm the sad, drunk host.
Well, we assume that...
I cry myself to sleep every night.
That's right. Well, we assume that Ashley went on to bigger and better things.
Well, you know, again, the assumption that that the co-host situation or that hosting Freak Train is somehow a career move is just really
one day a month.
That is bizarre. So as much as we adore it, it certainly is not. It is not. I wouldn't say that what we think of our devotion and love of Freak Train as being our occupation. But
certainly, real life actually does get in the way. And where did Ashley end up?
Ashley is now in Chicago. She decided she wanted to check out taking some coursework with Second City.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
So she has been doing some work with you know, comedy writing, and I think right now she's taking a course that is spontaneous musical comedy writing. I don't know the official title of it, but I can't wait to hear how that one goes. But yeah, she's really been enjoying herself up there.
That's good.
And but she misses it. she says all the time how much she pines to be able to do Freak Train. And you know, of course, if she were as loaded as she acts like she is by the way she dresses, she would be able to hop a plane every month. And you know, if she could ever do that, you know, all my woes would end in terms of figuring out, you know, what I want to do with the co-host situation now.
Have her call
speaking,
it in.
Yeah, have her phone it in. But having, and speaking of what you want to do with the co-host situation, the most recent co-host that you had, Dave Burdick, is now moving to New York.
Yes, he is, and of course, you know, I don't want to speak for him in terms of all the motivations therein, but, I mean, needless to say, he's had New York or L.A. Sort of as options, you know, as he develops what, you know, his style is with his stand-up and what the different, you know, opportunities may be to further work with his Secret Circus show that he produces. So, you know, I think a couple doors kind of showed themselves. I don't know how wide open they are necessarily, but he was like, looks like a possibility, and I think he felt like he needed to jump on that.
Certainly at his young age, when opportunities present themselves, it's wise to jump on them. And everybody at the Big Freak Train will no doubt miss him. So what are you going to do now that Dave's gone?
Well, What's going to happen now is we will actually have guest co-hosts, and sometimes those guest co-hosts will be fellow performers of Denver, writers, what have you. But sometimes those co-hosts will be just really cool people that Denver should know more about. So I think it'll be fun sometimes to get people up there with me that aren't necessarily performers and see them and their reactions to the freaks and the acts, and use that opportunity to kind of get to know these people and possibly the organizations that they might represent. You know, hopefully we can get to know some pretty cool, wacky, you know, people that aren't necessarily of the performance ilk, but, you know, contribute to or lead projects that make Denver the cool-ass town that it is.
Cool-ass town.
Before I move on to the next question that I want to ask, we do need for you, and I know you've struggled with this in the past couple of months, but can you quickly go over the rules for Freak Train for our two or three people that are listening?
The rules are pretty simple. First of all, you do have 5 minutes to perform, and you get a 30-second setup and a 30-second cleanup time on either end of the 5 minutes. You're allowed to do whatever the heck you want up there on the stage as long as you're not causing any harm to the theater, yourself, or any other patrons. In terms of the performer and the requirements of that, that's really fairly stipulationless.
Okay, and now that you've covered that, have there been any acts in the past that you can think of that have violated the rules and had to be stopped?
There was one act that it was one of those deals where they were nearing the end of their 5 minutes anyway. So, but they were flailing themselves off of the stage and into the wall. You know, as much as when you see people do things like that, you think, well, that's natural selection at work. I don't really want to get in the way. Also, there's nothing more distracting for a show than an ambulance arrival. So we did have to, you know, say, well, all right, I think that's good for you.
We're
but
done.
Really,
and that was enough to stop.
Really, there's been nothing else.
Yeah. I've only been to 5 so far, but what I get from it is that it's a place where just about damn near any type of performer, provided that they travel light, so to speak, can throw just about any damn thing up against a proverbial wall and see if it sticks. It's got an amazingly supportive crowd. It's an intimate little theater. With that said, Jerry, and please do spare the fragile feelings of those of us in the immediate room, but how often does an act at Freak Train leave the stage with you thinking, Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, what the fuck was that?
Well, almost 70% of the time, I would say.
That much.
Oh, Lord. I'm not very good at math, but that's a lot.
Yeah, I would, you know, I would be very disappointed if I left, you know, any Freak Train night driving away thinking, well, that was just totally predictable and everything fit in a nice little box.
Well, that's true.
So you like it strange, huh?
I think that That's what Freak Train is stuff you can't necessarily point to and have a category for it. You know, the times that people have been moved so much by different acts have been the times where, you know, an individual or a group of people really lean into the absence of requirement of what an act needs to be, you know, and show us different approaches to performance and different approaches to relating to the audience and, you know, different different ideas of what preparation or lack thereof.
Show up! Just show up!
Can be, you know. It's thrilling. It's so thrilling sometimes to see somebody get up there and you realize that they have really put in quite a bit of work on it. And it's equally as thrilling to see when someone literally just decided, well, I'm going to sign up and I have no idea what I'm going to do. And what they'll pull together sometimes by just the energy of the room and just, you know, sheer innovation of the holy shit butt-clenching factor. And that's actually why we created the 13th Freak, you know, a couple of years ago.
To essentially just put people on the spot and see what happens.
Yeah, where, you know, we have 12 slots for sign-up, but we added a 13th slot that gets chosen by number, by the number of person that walks through the door that night. And what sort of spurred that was actually one of the kids from Buntport Theater Buntport used to get to come to Freak Train a lot more often. They used to use it as a forum to sort of do snippets of upcoming shows. But now they're just too cool for school. No, not really. They are so busy that, and usually the last Monday of the month is a night where they are rehearsing and working on an upcoming show that they're trying to put together. I don't know if you've been to Buntport, but if you haven't, you need to run and get over there right now. But they have things going on the entire year. I mean, they are solidly performing. But one of the things that they said that they missed about Freak Train one of the last times that they had been was that it didn't seem to have that holy shit, what's about to happen factor. That there were quite a lot of, you know, sort of stand-up acts that, you know, were coming in and testing their material kind of thing, which, you know, certainly we don't frown upon, but a whole night of stand-up starts to kind of take the freak right out of the train, you know?
Keep that in mind. So, keep that in mind, you, with your stand-up act coming. I'll try to keep that in mind with my lame-ass ones.
Well, but again, that's, you know,
stop getting defensive and let's please talk about the 13th freak.
I just want to make sure that someone listening to this doesn't think, oh, well, never mind, I won't go in.
Don't worry,
whatever you want to put on the stage.
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
Perfect. So what we decided, and this was, again, part of this suggestion, how do we get some of that, you know, pinch hitter feeling going again? Because when we first began Freak Train, we would have 12 slots and maybe only 6 were taken for the night, but we still needed to have a whole show. So all of us there would go, well, I'll do something. Shit, we don't know what we'll do, but, you know, we'll spend the next 15 minutes throwing something together.
Yeah.
And that was so much fun that as people started preparing more and you know, the sign-up sheet was consistently full, there tended to get to be less and less of that, you know, just pulled together feeling.
And as you expertly said before, the butt clench factor.
The butt clench factor. Exactly. So that's what the 13th freak serves the purpose of.
Well, and you know, I think that specifically with the 13th freak, it's almost like a really cruel thing if you get the wrong person up there. And I say that because specifically my poor wife was October's 13th freak.
Oh, really?
And this is a person who, she's a first grade teacher. She barely, you know, has enough courage to go up and watch me do anything. And all of a sudden, she has to go up and do something on stage.
Well,
and after she did it, then it was like a rush for her.
Mm-hmm.
Having, you know, just getting up on stage, it was like, wow.
Yeah.
It isn't impossible.
No.
So I think it's a good thing to have that 13th freak, because you never know what's going to happen, like you said, and it can also be good for those who go up.
Absolutely.
Of course, she had to go up because my mom and my dad refused. But my dad would have done great. I know he would have. It's just that he can't climb the stairs.
Well, you know, I think that's a great point. The thing is, you know, where the audience has sort of learned over the years, you know, what it means to be a giving audience and what it means to give the time of the stage to that freak for that 5 minutes, it also means that, you know, they become more aware of not just the bravery, but the inspired nature that it takes to get up there, you know. And
right.
And I feel like our audience turns into, like, this, you know, uber, like, just, like, super audience. And I feel like we are raising an audience that then turns around and goes out into the world and goes and sees other things and goes and experiences other things as an audience in a much more receptive way. They actually take an active role in that, you know, and they say, you know, what does this live performance really mean? If anything, it is thrilling, you know? So even if it's not good.
Well, and they are an amazingly supportive audience. I'll definitely say that. Justin,
do you tend to find a lot of repeat audience members? I mean, I know that a lot of people come up and perform regularly on the Freak Train, but do you find a lot of audience members just coming in weekly as their
monthly.
You know, or monthly rather? well, you know, every the last week.
Maybe they're that dedicated.
But do you see them coming in over and over at the Freak Train and say, hey, Joe, how's it going, you know?
Definitely. We definitely have, you know, obviously there are the Freak Train regulars who also tend to take the stage. But we have an amazing amount of Freak Train regulars that's their ritual every month. And that's, you know, I've had people tell me that they quit a job because the job started scheduling them on the Monday night that they would ask that they were asking off for. And you know,
as much as I love Freak Train, that's irresponsible.
Well, you know, I guess it depends on what your job is. You know, I mean, if you've got a dime a dozen job that you could, you know, get for, you know, working for some other asshole that will probably give you Monday nights off, then, you know, go for it. But no, I kind of have like a, do we need to talk? You know, like, I hope you know that we love you, but we really want you to pay your rent, too. We want a roof over your head.
You can't come live here.
it was a woman, and she said, oh, no, don't worry about me. I hated that job anyway. So, I mean, it clearly was just, you know, more fuel for her fire to get out of there.
Dedication.
But yeah, you
that's
know,
dedication.
She said, you don't mess with the last Monday of my month. That's already given to Freak Train.
I have a question for you. What's the size of a full house there? I wasn't really able to count. I was a little too concerned about my performance.
It
so.
Can vary. I think it tops out at around 170-ish.
So yeah. You have 12 performance slots. 13 counting the 13th Freak, and 170 would be a full house. And it gets close to full, if not full, just about every time now, doesn't it?
Yeah, there was a period there where it was not, and I think that part was partly due to just a failure to communicate. We have to ride this very thin line, actually, between not over-promoting it and, you know, and reminding at least our regular audience that it's happening.
Right.
Because there was a period of time where we were having standing room only each and every time, and people were lining up outside of the doors far in advance, and were getting turned away by the end of the line because we were just at capacity. And it was not, you know, as much as you might think, boy, I bet that felt great, it felt horrible. It felt awful.
Well, sure, because... Yeah, because that's not what the whole thing's
that
really about.
That's not what it's about. And I, you know, we talked, and, you know, it really, the marketing of it has to take this sort of organic quality that we rely on the very people who come and sort of develop this almost protective sense of Freak Train, that we rely on them to, you know, for word of mouth,
mm-hmm.
and that it's sort of, the attendance is sort of self-fulfilling by the people that just love it and, you know, want to bring friends, and then they love it and they want to bring friends. And so what we've decided is that our marketing approach is really less marketing and more just reminding in plenty of time to remember to clear, you know, clear your schedule for that Monday.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to, with only having one night a month to do this, you know, it makes it both imperative that you remember, because otherwise you'll have to wait a whole month again, but it also makes it very delicate situation in that we can only pack in about 170 people for any given show. So if it's over-promoted, then we have people walking away disappointed, and they may have been there for the very first time to experience it, and they're experiencing getting back in their car and grumbling.
Yeah, and that would certainly suck for us, since we drive all the way from the Springs to go.
As we
mentioned briefly before, this coming month's Freak Train, at the end of this particular month, which I guess what is April, the regular performance slots will be cut from 12 to 5, with 7 slots devoted to something extra special. So please do tell us and the kids listening at home, what is that something special?
The something special is something called
30.
It's so special.
It's so special it wears a helmet and licks windows.
It's so special it makes me retarded. It's called 365 Plays, 365 Days. And an amazing playwright named Susan Laurie Parks wrote a play a day back in 2002. And she's, you know, been working on them and honing them. And they are now out in an entire body of work. And there are hubs all over the United States that are enlisting 52 different, and this is each, in each hub, there are 52 different performance entities, we'll call them. Sometimes it might be a theater company. Sometimes it might be a performing arts group. Sometimes, you know.
Sometimes it might be four bums on the street just doing a couple plays for coins.
Exactly. Do you know that your voice sounds kind of like the movie phone guy?
Well, that particular voice probably does, but I've got several. But anyway, 365. I'll do a little Regis for you. 365 plays in 365 days. Go.
Woo! Anywho, so in Denver, Denver is one of those national hubs, and Freak Train is one of those 52 entities for the Denver hub. And we have week 25. We're responsible for performing all seven plays for that week, but the requirements are not that you have to, say, perform them one a day. You can perform all plays in one performance as long as they're performed in order. And that's what we will do. So there will be seven slots of the 12 that are devoted to each of these seven plays. And we have already had a great response from our regular freaks, and we will have pretty much all of them already assigned that night.
And that was going to be my next question. How many of the seven plays have been snatched up to this point?
Pretty much, depending on...
Six and a half.
I have not sat down to work out the logistics. I just got all the names of the people who wanted to be involved, and there'll be some emailing that goes on over this next week, and we'll figure it out. I want to leave at least a couple open for grabs that night. And my goal is to make sure that we have cared for these plays that have been written and that they get performed. But I also, again, want to make sure that there's a little room for that butt clench factor we so love at Freak Train.
Exactly. Well, that is excellent. I'm actually really looking forward to see how that all pans out, especially since it's being shoehorned into the existing format and rules for the Freak Train.
Yeah, I can't wait to see you. I feel like it was a special enough event. I mean, really, it is an event that makes a community of the entire nation of theatrical performers.
It's like Hands Across America, but with plays.
Right, but with plays, and you know, I just think it's phenomenal. It was certainly, you know, we thought about it. You know, what does this do if we mess with the format this one time? And you know, we've been very, very protective of the format to not fuck with it, because you know, the more you fuck with something, the more it just gets away from the center of its, you know, good thing going on, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely. But speaking of being protected of the format, I'm aware of at least one ripoff, except I guess it'd be an homage to Freak Train, the Rocky Mountain USO show, which happens at the Bug on the second Wednesday of every month. It's pretty much Freak Train with prizes. Has Freak Train spawned any other of the same types of shows up to this point?
Yeah, and actually, let me clarify. Certainly, the format of an open stage, i.e., open mic, is not new. So
you're protective of it, but it's not new.
Yeah, we're protective of Freak Train's format.
What they've done
we're not
with it.
We're not protective
exactly.
of the open mic format, because I think that any town that, you know, has, you know, any sort of vibrant performance community going on can almost, you know, take the temperature of that by how many, you know, jam hours and open mic sessions are going on around town. And I think the more the merrier, really.
Certainly.
We'll see. There's what you mentioned, and then I think I've actually heard, unfortunately, that Oddville at Avenue Theater isn't going on anymore, which kind of makes me sad. But that is an unconfirmed rumor at this point. I have not, you know, actually seen that is true. I just heard that. But yeah, Oddville was a sort of inspired by. There was something very briefly that went on at Forest Room 5, but I don't even know if it made it, you know, more than a month. It, you know, the thing is that you go to Freak Train and you see how loosey-goosey it is and how fun it is, and you think, oh, yeah, you know, just get a stage and some people and we're there, you know. But what I think people forget is that, you know, for instance, Freak Train, like I said, we started in 2000, so we're going to be... What does that mean? We're going to be seven?
You're going to be
August?
Seven. You're going to be in second or third grade, I think.
Yeah, my daughter started in 2002, and she's
right.
seven.
Right, so, Oh, okay. No, but but we'll be entering into our eighth year, and you know, it takes time. We started with an audience of 30 people.
Certainly. And commitment.
So yeah, it takes time for that to become. And you know, also too, like I said, I think sometimes what Alex does is underestimated. And I think you know, to think, okay, yeah, and then you know, someone to run lights. You know, it's like, oh God, the things that Alex
flick a couple switches, Christ, for Christ's sake, just flick
holy
the switches.
Holy, the things Alex pulls together with these. You should hear the booth conversations that go on before the show. They're really funny. I usually have to excuse myself because I think Alex, you know, his head is going to explode. But you know, the requests that he'll get sometimes, it's like, you know,
yeah.
Hey, okay, so. Well, there's a way, like, I could just, like, I don't know, is there a way, like, I could come in, like, suspended from the ceiling or something?
Superman flies.
The answer is no.
No. Well, you know, I, for one, appreciate Alex. I do try to keep it simple for him if I have anything for him to do. And he's always been very helpful and very nice, as, you know, have everybody at Freak Train. And I really, really, really appreciate you taking some time to be interviewed by us. And it went by so fast, we're out of time.
All right. Well, thanks for your interest.
Well, thank you very much for being a part of the little goofy show we've got here. It's the Son of Cheese Half Hour Power Hour. I've been Derek Knight of sonofcheese.com. With me, as always, goofy co-host Colin Burton from fizzlingpop.com.
Goodbye, everybody.
Special guest in studio, the Jew Wario, Justin Carmichael.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
And our big special guest on the phone, Jeree Hinshaw, the host of Freak Train at the Bug Theater, the last Monday of every month, with the exception of December, at the Bug Theater, is located at 37th to Navajo in beautiful Denver, Colorado.
Freaktrain.com.
Freaktrain.com. Also, MySpace.com/FreaktrainDenver.
Yeah!
Yay!
Thanks so much, Derek.
Thank you. Thanks for being a part of the program. And hey, kids, if you're listening, we'll see you back again next Wednesday.